friends, your worst nightmares, and your fondest dreams coming at you again on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's July 12th, 2001. Show Bathrobe Spears Broadsides in its sixth year and still shouting. Stay with us.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio.
Okay, it's July 12th, around 11:25, out of the Homeless Services Center. In front of it, Homeless Services Center Officer Eric Seeley is talking to some homeless folks, and we're talking with Sammy. Can I give your name, Sammy? Is that okay? Or?
Actually, it's Thomas Thompson.
I beg your pardon. Thomas?
Very good.
Why am I always calling you Sammy?
I have no idea. People do it to me all the time.
Wow. Thomas.
Very good.
Formerly with the River Street Refugees.
Yes.
And a man who lives in his vehicle.
Yes, I do.
And you've found that recently you've been able to do so without a lot of hassle from the police department.
Oh, very recently, yes. I've been doing it now for about a year. I don't receive no hassle because I go by myself. I stay by myself. Mm-hmm. Other than my girlfriend, I'm very much alone, and I stay a loner, other than when I'm working here. Mm-hmm. I don't work here anymore at the shelter, service center.
And that's one of the things we're going to talk about.
That's one of the things we're going to talk about. It's nothing really very bad. It's just that the people in the service center just don't see eye to eye. That's the homeless people in the service center just don't see eye to eye. There's a big communication gap between the people that need the services and the people that want the services. I say need the services because the people that need the services can't get what they need. For instance, housing. Maybe three meals a day other than the soup kitchen. The food here has improved greatly. It's improved tremendously. I love this place. However, it's been taking some big changes in the last 6, 7, 8, 10 months. It's gone through a lot of changes.
How long have you worked here? Were you working
here? I've been here off and on for 2 years.
What kind of work were you doing?
I worked in the kitchen, and I worked into the shower bay.
What were you paid when you were working here?
That's another problem. Mm-hmm. I worked here. I was hired here for the first time for $6.25 an hour. That was back a few years ago. I was hired here again this year for $9 an hour, and I wasn't paid my scale pay. I was actually cheated out of $2.75 an hour from the 60 hours of work. I use 60 hours because it's just a general figure. I can know for sure for 50 hours. Mm-hmm. I was told that I wasn't entitled to money. I was told I wasn't hired for that kind of money. I was fired because I asked another employee and paid another employee to do my job because my other job took so long. This job here requires a lot of give and take. Mm-hmm. It's more given than taken.
For example, what would an average day be for your work here? What kind of work do you, how'd you run us through a day?
11 hours.
What kinds of things were you doing?
From breakfast to cleaning up the bays after everybody goes home. Mm-hmm. And that goes on till sometimes 10:30 at night. It actually goes that far. Right. The first time I had this job, I had to quit because I had to hike through the Poconip, no place to sleep. Mm-hmm. I was right before I bought my van. There was no place to sleep. And I had to hike through the Poconip at 10:30 at night, which isn't a very idea going through the drug dealers. Mm-hmm. And that alone will cause somebody a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. I love this place. I can't say how much I love it because I've been through a lot of inferiorities of these people. People just don't get along that well because I speak my piece here. Mm-hmm. I'm known to speak my piece if you ask me. Mm-hmm. You asked me today to say something, and I'm saying this. This place could use a lot of help.
When were you fired?
3 months ago.
And who fired you?
Linda, I can't think of her last name, but she's under the director. She's the one that hired me.
And you feel you were unfairly fired?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. Yes, I definitely do.
Did she offer you a grievance procedure where you could go to Ken Cole and talk to him?
Sir. None at all. Uh-huh. I was told I was no longer needed. I was put off so I wouldn't have to get my paycheck for another couple of weeks. That's the exact feeling that I got, and that's the feeling I'm sticking with.
Wasn't it a budget-oriented deal, a personality deal, or a difference of policy in your mind?
I think it's a personality deal. Mm-hmm. I'm an ex-addict. Well, I'm always an addict. Mm-hmm. I had a little slip this last couple of months.
Heroin we're talking?
No, crank. Crank is my preferred drug, mm-hmm. other than pot. Pot. Well, I'm clean now, and I plan on staying that way.
But you're like a pothead to me, man, with those blue eyes.
However, this place has changed tremendously. My heart's gone from it. Actually, drug dealers are allowed here. They are allowed here. They're caught. They're not. Who gives a damn? You know, that's the...
This is a change from your previous experience?
It's a change from my previous experience. If it's done out in the open, there's a few people here that really care. There are people here that really do care about people's addictions.
We're talking about crank, heroin,
everything.
Crack,
right down to smoking and joint,
aspirin.
Right down to everything. Uh-huh. Like yesterday, I found out I was dealing drugs I didn't know nothing about.
I see. So you are one of these phantom drug dealers, but you actually aren't a drug dealer.
No, I'm not. Everyone that knows Thomas Thompson knows I'm not, I don't do that.
Right.
And quite a few people know me. Uh-huh. If not by voice, not by my name, by my face. Uh-huh. And this is a very good place. I want to express that. I really do. This is a good place. I love this place.
Right.
But it needs a lot of changes.
Would you like to, should we have a discussion with Linda about, would you like to be given an opportunity? She just walked by to... appeal your firing?
No, I don't. I feel relations best be like they are or I won't have a place to go. I was kicked off the lot yesterday because I found somebody wearing my clothes. Yes, I was kicked off the lot because I told somebody I wanted my clothes back.
And who kicked you off the lot?
Linda.
And what was the reason she gave?
Because one of the staff members was wearing my clothes. It was said it was found in a donation bin, mm-hmm. which was all true. As far as I can tell, it was true. Yeah. However, they're my clothes. I wanted them back.
Where did they? Did they disappear at one point?
I was staying in a warehouse off of Mission Street for the last couple months.
Right.
Since I've been away from here, I was staying in a warehouse for the last couple months, and all my things disappeared. I won't go as far as say what's going on there. However, things disappeared there all the time. And my clothes turned up here. I wanted them back. And for speaking my voice, for speaking what I felt like I should have back, I got kicked off the lot for. I was allowed to come back because I went through the proper procedures. If I hadn't went through the proper procedure, I wouldn't have been able to come back.
Were you loud and threatening to the individual who had your clothes, or did you simply, did they claim that it was your behavior that made you persona non grata?
No. Actually, it was the other way around, totally. The person that had on my clothes was loud and threatening.
What's the name of the person who had on your clothes?
I think his name is Tom.
Did you ever get your clothes back?
I got my clothes back.
And how did that happen?
I had to go through the lot security and express that that was my clothes. Mm-hmm. And I was called a bitch for doing so.
I see.
What? That transpired me kicked off the lot.
Are we talking about, like, fancy velvet duds? What kind of clothes are we talking about?
It's just something that was personal. Uh-huh. Something that I recognized right off the bat.
Right.
It was typical Santa Cruz dress.
And did Tom, if that's his name, simply not like you personally? What was the reason you think he didn't want to surrender the clothes when you asked them?
Yes, I think there's a personal vendetta there. Yes, I do.
So I guess your prior staff and his subsequent staff would have to do something with that, like your old staff and his new staff?
Definitely. There was problems whenever I was staff here to start with, and he was volunteers. So he turned out to be a friend. It's cool. It's all good.
Let me harken back to a period 5 years ago when you lived in the back 40 for a while at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Yes, I did.
And you may recall when Rotkin, Kennedy, Daryl Darling, and Palmer So closed this down because they claimed that there was flooding here and porta potty problems. Of course, this is the same time when Karen Gillette refused to open the bathrooms at night.
Right.
You remember that SOS, Save Our Shelters group?
Oh, I quite remember Karen Gillette very well.
What do you remember about her?
She was a lovely woman. Very personable. But she can be very evil.
Regarding the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, you were told, because I was at this meeting, by Rotkin and Kennedy, that you and a number of other people of 45 or 50 could go to New Brighton Beach, and you became, for a period of time, now of course they've got even worse restrictions on using state parks, but the city would pay for it for 2 weeks and allow you to relocate there. But of course that didn't help the other 150 people who were, should we say, there at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. Some claim, and Kennedy still does, that the shelter was the back 40 was a violent, drug-ridden area where, you know, nobody was safe or it was completely inappropriate to camp at. Others, like Dan Hopkins, say that while there were, you know, people using drugs and there was some violence, nobody ever died back there, but in fact people died after they were forced to leave. What's your view?
As any place you go, there's going to be drugs, there's going to be violence, and there's going to be problems. And then there's going to be no problems. But the only thing that I can really say about the back 40 that I can remember is that it was a place to sleep. And yes, it was safe. And yes, there was drugs, just like now. There's drugs right here just now. That's everywhere you go.
Well, I know that in the summer, several activists, Mark, I think was the name of one activist, and his girlfriend, insisted that the tents be allowed to stay up. And people began keeping their tents up during the day, so folks had a place to keep their pets, they had some privacy, and there was a de facto community created, although not everybody liked everybody else, and there were kind of different segments. What was your feeling about that Coral Street Open Air Shelter?
Actually, it was a place for people to go at night. And I believe that's what it should have stayed. Someone to go at night, to keep them off the street, keep them safe. And as far as the tents being set up every day, no, I don't agree with that. So this isn't home. This isn't home.
Right. Well, there were those who said, and let me get your thoughts on this, that when people worked during the day or had pets, they needed a place to keep their stuff, and that was one of the values of having the tents there during the day. What was your thought on that?
They should have made plans other than here. That's my personal opinion. This isn't the place for it.
Now, you became a part of a group that became known as the River Street Refugees.
Yes, I did.
Tell us a little bit about them, refugees.
Honorary. We believed in what we believed in. We believe in what we believe in. I'll rephrase that.
Now, were you a gang of knife-wielding thugs who went around terrorizing the merchants?
No, sir.
I didn't think so.
No, sir. Not that way at all.
You were, in fact, people that had been driven out of the Coral Street shelter and were seeking to find refuge in state parks by going from place to place looking for a piece of property?
Place to place. We have to go somewhere. Everyone has to have somewhere to go. Even if it's hiding under somebody else's bush, somebody has to have someplace to go. Keep their dogs during the day. That's where your friends come in. This isn't a place for friends. This is a place for service. That's all this is. It's all it's ever been. It's not a place for friends. This is actually a half and half. I say half for society, the other half for misfits. That's the only way I can really put that. Excuse the term misfits, however I fit that description too.
So do I. But luckily, I usually have a room to stay in, which makes it easier on me. You're living in your vehicle. You say you've seen a change in how vehicles, people living in vehicles have been treated, or just you? What's your feeling?
No, it's everybody. Everybody here, if you treat yourself with a personal reverence, you get treated back with a personal reverence. If you give somebody a bunch of crap, you're going to get back a bunch of crap.
What about law enforcement's position using the city's sleeping ban, which of course applies to vehicles from 11 to 8:30? I've heard recently there was a big bust at Costco's, so I guess there were 20 or 30, either people or vehicles, I'm not sure which there. That's what we heard this morning from us.
30 vehicles there, yes, there's a lot of people there. And naturally, a place like Costco and the park is not going to put up with all these people staying there 24 hours a day. The garbage, it's not good. They're not going to put up with it.
I heard somebody say that parking near the police station itself downtown might not be a bad idea. What's your thought on that?
Careful. Careful. It's closer to the tow yard.
Has your vehicle been towed in the last 5 years?
No.
Did you receive tickets after you were driven out of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter when Kennedy and Rotkin closed it down? Or any time since, for camping or sleeping?
I got one camping ticket, and it took me 5 days to see the judge.
5 days?
5 days. I did 5 days to see the judge. One camping ticket.
Wow. And this is because you'd set up a tent on top of the town clock and were causing all kinds of trouble? Or?
No, actually, I was down in the Poconos, and somebody lit a candle, and the cops saw it. Rangers saw it.
I see. What judge gave you that sentence? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember. It's been 2 years ago. I'm just careful about where I camp anymore. I don't want to go to jail for 5 days and wait to see the judge say I can't sleep there no more.
So you've been camping for 5 days or you got 5 days in jail?
I got 5 days in jail for sleeping.
What year was this, do you remember?
Actually, it's been about 5 years ago I got the ticket.
97 or 96?
And I went to court in 2000.
Wow. And then in 2000 you got 5 days?
5 days for it. That's before I saw the judge.
Before you saw the judge?
Before I saw the judge.
You were in jail for 5 days before.
Right.
Wow. That, of course, violates the 1999 sleeping ban amendments passed by Catherine Byers and the other city council members that made minor changes in the sleeping and camping ban. Wow. Any comments about the Homeless Services Center? What kinds of improvements you'd like to see here?
I'd like to see all the drug dealers off the lot. It don't belong here. Don't belong here. This is a place for women, children, and families in search of a life. That's what this place is for. It is a search of a life. It's not to come here to get high. It's not to come here to associate friends and look for things that don't belong here. That's Thomas Thompson said that.
Oh, yeah. What about Camp Paradise? We've heard about that, the clean and sober, neat and tidy campground across the San Lorenzo River near Highway 1. Any thoughts about that campground?
Needs work.
Give us your thoughts.
This is just a start. Okay, like everything else, you know, we've gone through, it takes things to work out. Things have to be worked out. Camp Paradise is just something that could turn into a big blunder if things aren't done properly. Mm-hmm. And so far, things aren't done properly, I suppose, because people are having trouble with it. If Camp Paradise was a Camp Paradise, there would be no problem.
So what problems do you see? Have you been to Camp Paradise?
Yes, I have. I've been through there.
And what kind of difficulties do you see there?
Actually, none. It's a beautiful place. It's gorgeous. However, city law don't allow it.
So the problem is with the city law, not with the campers?
Not with the campers.
I think we are in total agreement.
Total.
Anything you want to add?
I love Santa Cruz. I think this is a beautiful place and always has been. And I wish the Homeless Community Service Center a lot of luck, because they're going to need it. I'm serious, Jim. They're going to need this. People need this place. A lot of people are going to be coming and going. A lot of people are going to be coming and going. More families are getting homeless. More families are needing help. More people like us.
Thank you, Timothy.
I love you.
All right.
And that was Timothy out at the Homeless Services Center this morning. You're tuned now to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 2 hours of civil rights in your face, and hopefully in the city council's face, from 6 to 8 every Thursday evening, and of course from 11 to 1:30 every Sunday afternoon here on 96.3 FM. We have a call-in number in case you wish to make your own views known, have any comments on the subject, or related subjects you think you want to talk about, concerning things ranging from rent control to the sleeping ban to police misconduct to life on the streets, you name it. We try to focus to some extent on folks outside. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's who we are, and we invite you to join us. We had a couple of potential studio guests who didn't quite make it to the studio from our secret rendezvous spot. But there are a couple of events coming up. There is a protest against, psychiatric abuse, the kinds of drug 'em, lock 'em up, in some cases shock 'em approach to mental health, as psychiatrists and politicians like to call it, which is still being used in this state. Dominican uses forced drugging. Dominican uses forced incarceration. That's what a 5150 is, a 72-hour hold. 5250, for those who don't know, is not just the amount of money they're going to be paying off Dolphin Lee residents to leave and get out of town, but is also the code number for a section which will hold you for 14 days. And a 5350 will hold you for, I believe it's a 14 or 28-day period after that. Could be a longer period than that. All part of the health and welfare code, I believe, or welfare and institutions code, perhaps. We were concerned several programs ago when we spoke with an activist in Sacramento, Sally Zinman, about attempts by Assemblywoman Thompson of Los Angeles to change the existing, I guess it's the Landis-Petrus Short Act. I probably have one of those names wrong, but it's the law passed at the end of the 60s, early 70s, that set up the standard for determining if somebody could be held against their will in a psychiatric facility. And that standard previously used to be apparently a diagnostic standard. Did the psychiatrist think you had a mental illness? But as of the passage of that law and as of the present moment, the standard is now you have to be a danger to yourself, a danger to others, and or gravely disabled. Those are the three criterion. And they're criterion that aren't psychiatric criterion. They're ordinary, common sense, person on the street kind of criterion. Anybody looking at another person could make that judgment if they assess the situation thoroughly enough. And it doesn't require a lot of gobbledygook and psychiatric terminology and pseudo-expertise to get to that point. So, unfortunately, they're now trying to change that standard again. The bill, I believe, is in the Senate, or it was a couple weeks ago. I don't know its status, but perhaps we can get a call-in from somebody who does. Again, I remind you, our phone number here is 427-3772, and lines are open perhaps before the end of the show. We can get Jane Kaiser, who heads the Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective to give us a call. I know that on Sunday, this coming Sunday, I guess that's going to be July 15th, there is going to be a noon rally at the town clock for the rights of folks incarcerated in these psychiatric institutions, for the rights of people generally who have to suffer from the threat of incarceration, stigmatization, forced drugging, and so forth. And folks are invited to come to that noon rally. I don't know if I'm going to be there myself since it's in the middle of my show, but my show again on Sunday is from 11 to 1:30, but I certainly encourage people to check it out. And I found a very interesting Mental Health Declaration of Human Rights in the June 14th issue of a homeless publication out of Boston called Spare Change. I'm going to read it. It's rather lengthy, but I think it kind of hits the mark, and I think that it's timely because there is a, I think around this is July, and there's a sort of, I guess there's a mad power worldwide happening where folks who have been classified as crazy or mad or disabled in that respect are standing up and saying, whoa, you know, don't call me a homo, don't call me a nigger, don't call me mad, you know, call me what I am, you know, or I'll call myself what I am, and I'll assert my rights. And this is, I think, an interesting declaration of human rights for folks who are facing stigmatization and incarceration by mental health authorities. This is by the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and it reads as follows. All great organizations set forth codes by which they align their purposes and activities. The Mental Health Declaration of Human Rights articulates the guiding principle of CCHR, Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and the standards against which human rights violation by psychiatry are relentlessly investigated and exposed. A. No person shall be given psychiatric or psychological treatment against her or his will. B. No person, woman, man, or child may be denied her or his personal liberty by reason of mental illness, so-called, without a fair jury trial by lay people and with proper legal representation. C. No person shall be admitted to or held in a psychiatric institution, hospital, or facility because of their religious, political, or cultural beliefs and practices. D. And this is a very long section. Any patient has, 1. The right to be treated with dignity as a human being. 2. The right to hospital amenities without distinction as to race, color, sex, language, religion, political opinion, social origin, or status by right of birth or property. 3. The right to have a thorough physical and clinical examination by a competent registered general practitioner of one's choice to ensure that one's mental condition is not caused by any undetected or untreated physical illness, injury, or defect, and the right to seek a second medical opinion of one's choice. 4. The right to fully equipped medical facilities and appropriately trained medical staff in hospitals so that competent physical clinical examinations can be performed. 5. The right to choose the kind or type of therapy to be employed, and the right to discuss this with a general practitioner, healer, or minister of one's choice. 6. The right to have all the side effects of any offered treatment made clear and understandable in written form and in the patient's native language. 7. The right to accept or refuse treatment in particular, the right to refuse sterilization, electroshock treatment, insulin shock, lobotomy, or any other psychosurgical brain operation, aversion therapy, narcotherapy, deep sleep therapy, and any drugs producing unwanted side effects. 8. The right to make official complaints without reprisal to an independent board which is composed of non-psychiatric personnel, lawyers, and lay people. Complaints may encompass any torturous, cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment received while under psychiatric care. 9. The right to have private counsel with a legal advisor and to take legal action. 10. The right to discharge oneself at any time and to be discharged without restriction, having committed no offense. 11. The right to manage one's own property and affairs with a legal advisor if necessary, or if deemed incompetent by a court of law, to have a state-appointed executor to manage such until one is adjudicated competent. Such executor is accountable to the patient's next of kin, legal advisor, or guardian. 12. The right to see and possess one's hospital records and to take legal action with regard to any false information contained therein which may be damaging to one's reputation. 13. The right to take criminal action with the full assistance of law enforcement agents against any psychiatrist, psychologist, or hospital staff for any abuse, false imprisonment, assault from treatment, sexual abuse or rape, or any violation of mental health or other law, and the right to a mental health law that does not indemnify or modify the penalties for criminal, abusive, or negligent treatment of patients committed by any psychologist, psychiatrist, or hospital staff. 14. the right to sue psychiatrists, their associations and colleges, the institution or staff for unlawful detention, false reports, or damaging treatment. 15, the right to work or to refuse to work, and the right to receive just compensation on a pay scale comparable to union or state national wages for similar work for any work performed while hospitalized. 16, the right to education or training so as to enable one to better earn a living when discharged, and the right to choice over what kind of education or training is received. 17, the right to receive visitors and a minister of one's own faith. 18, the right to make and receive telephone calls, and the right to privacy with regard to all personal correspondence to and from anyone. 19, the right to freely associate or not with any group or person in a psychiatric institution, hospital, or facility. 20, the right to a safe environment without having in the environment persons placed there for criminal reasons. 21, the right to be with others of one's own age group. 22, the right to wear personal clothing, to have personal effects, and to have a secure place in which to keep them. 23, the right to daily physical exercise in the open. 24, the right to a proper diet and nutrition and to 3 meals a day. And 25, the right to hygienic conditions and non-overcrowded facilities and to sufficient undisturbed leisure and rest. Almost wondered if they were going to forget that. That's the Mental Health Declaration of Human Rights in the June 14th through 27th edition of Spare Change, which is a homeless publication similar to Street Spirit or the Street Sheet, which comes out of Boston, Massachusetts. Yeah, that last one, and it's, of course, the Mental Health Declaration of Human Rights, talks about rest. And, of course, I was going to say they've forgotten about the right to sleep, because in hospitals you don't get arrested for sleeping as you would outside on the streets or in the bushes or anywhere in the city limits of Santa Cruz, in your own vehicle, wherever it is, on pain of a $54 fine, as, in fact, is still the case under our current Santa Cruz City Council, the Fitzmaurice regime, supposedly the Green Party-endorsed Fitzmaurice regime, which continues to hypocritically support a sleeping ban for Fitzmaurice's city council in power, while those, while the Green Party's platform statewide and its individuals, its members locally claim that they oppose the sleeping ban, but they won't say a word about Fitzmaurice in any public forum or meaningful way that would challenge what he's doing. And that's, of course, been a real problem. And there's actually a Green Party meeting coming up. I believe it's a Green Party assembly. I think it's at 4 o'clock on Saturday at the Loudoun Nelson Center for those who want to go. The Green Party is open to everyone, but, of course, if you're a critic, then they start assigning people to monitor whether you are being disruptive and to monitor you. That's what happened to me. And then, in fact, issues around homelessness, which had been referred to their homeless working group, which I jokingly called the homeless shirking group, got nowhere because they spent their time attacking me. And it was a real sad thing, but it really showed where they were at. They weren't interested in fighting the sleeping ban by criticizing the government that was enforcing it. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Jane from Perk.
All right.
And the Mad Pride celebration is going to be held this Saturday at the town clock. I think you mentioned Sunday.
Ooh, I did. I apologize.
Saturday is Bastille Day, which in the past we've tried to emphasize our anti-shock position.
Mm-hmm.
And for this will be the second year of the International Mad Pride celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And
mad and proud, man.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, based on...
But not as crazy as the people in power, that's for sure. So, do you know anything about the status of the Thompson bill, AB...
I think I heard that it was defeated, that... I'm not sure of this,
mm-hmm.
but I understand that $15 million they wanted to put into that for extra people to drug people and whatever, that was a stumbling block.
Yeah, as I remember, the Thompson bill was, as described by Sally Zeman on this show a couple weeks ago, it was different than AB 1800 last year in that it didn't deal with hospital procedures but dealt with forced outpatient therapy, compulsory outpatient therapy.
Actually, you know, most of the people that have been labeled that are so-called clients of the mental health system are forced drugged. They are not, you know, allowed to go through detoxification of their psychiatric drugs. Which was originally, you mentioned, in 1969 when the Lantrum-Petras Short Act came into being,
mm-hmm.
was that was known for the detoxification, deinstitutionalization, getting the people that were being tortured in those mental institutions and let them be freer in this, you know,
mm-hmm.
society. And I guess the psychiatrist pretty much struck down the idea of taking away one of their favorite treatments, or, you know, and so they continue to use that as the main form of treatment. And it is forced. I mean, they're pretty much told if you're in a board and care or transitional house or have a psychiatrist and a social worker that you just must take your drugs or you're going to get thrown into Dominican. And a lot of people get thrown into Dominican also because they have a toxic reaction to these drugs. Anyway, I'm going to be there on Saturday.
At noon.
And thank you for, you know, spending a lot of time on this subject.
Before you go, is there a number people can call if they want to be helpful in planning this event or in learning more about it?
They can reach you for my number, or my number is 475-7904.
And the name of the group you work with?
Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective.
Hey, Chan Kaiser, thank you very much.
Also, I'll mention that Support Coalition International is kind of the umbrella group for hundreds of groups such as PERC is.
You have a website you recommend that people go to?
Yeah, it's www.mindfreedom, and it's capital M and capital F, .org. And they can find all they want to know about Mad Pride and the mental patient movement.
And again, they can call you at
475-7904.
Or they can show up at noon on Saturday at the town clock.
Right.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thanks, Jane.
Bye-bye.
So, hey, you have a panoply of options out there, listeners. Just troop on down to the town clock, bring your wild and craziness with you, and celebrate, is it Mad Pride Day? I'm not sure what exactly the name is, but you got the game. The game is to assert the rights of people to control their own lives rather than to be controlled by others, and to deal with problems that come up in life and as they manifest themselves through therapies of their own choosing and not through the profit-oriented pharmaceuticals industry, which essentially runs the show at the moment. And again, if you want to catch Jane Kaiser, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, her number again, give me a call at 423-HUFF, or any numbers, by the way, that you hear on the show but didn't quite catch because you weren't quick enough with your pencil. Again, 423-4833 is the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I am no longer at the end of that line directly, but I do check in for messages regularly several times a day, and we'll try to get back to you. So, hey, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I will huff at you.
I'm taking the leader off of the wreck and shoving it into my arm. Wherever I feel life is coming on too strong. They left me in the clinic full of cynical and motherfucking bureaucrats. And they're the kind of dingbats are living on the tracks with the tracks in my arm. Said it all depends on which side the tracks you're on. So telling me what to wear and telling me cut my hair and trying to convince me that they really, really care about my health and about my wealth. But still they built the stealth, cause everybody's just looking out for that. So then I ask him, can I have a clean needle? He say, hell no, that's illegal, it's a crime. Yeah, to be broke in America, say it's a crime. To be black in America, come on, y'all. Locking brothers in the poorhouse who can't afford more house. Politicians nervous, it's the only free service they provide. You wanna go inside, there's a hot meal waiting for you. A deal we can score you on a bed for a night or two, or three or four months. They say they locking us up in a cell to protect us from ourselves. It smell like they got another plan in storehouse, or should I say warehouse, full of niggas and other misfits that couldn't turn tricks in the courthouse. Nah, it's a justice whorehouse, and it's a crime to be broke in America. Say it's a crime, yeah, to be broke in America. Come on, y'all. Come on, come on, yeah. Single county. Say we remember Attica, but don't forget to pat a few others on the back. As a matter of fact, Sister Asada Shakur and Geronimo Pratt. By MC International is fighting for political, but if you're analytical, you know it's much more critical than that. Percentages black is really, really whack. Can I kick a few facts? Yes, 6% in college from living on the block, 25% in prison, the school of hard knocks, 50% in poverty is living on a rock, 5,000 brothers on a death row box. Boom, 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 boom. They say the punishment is capital for those who lack in capital, because a public defender can't remember the last time that a brother wasn't treated like an animal. They say they blame it on a song when someone kills a cop. What music did they listen to when they bombed Iraq? Well, give me one example so I could take a sample. There's no need to play it backwards if you wanna hear the devil, 'cause music's not the problem. It didn't cause a bombing, but maybe they say listen to the songs of my people starving. Ooh, yeah, 'cause it's a crime. It's a crime, the way they're killing my people here in America.
Yeah, special tip of the hat to Skidmark Bob. That's a cut from his Houseless USA album, Volume 1. It's Crime to Be Broke in America, Michael Franti. First time I've heard it, not the last. I enjoyed it. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your bagel-chewing host, Uncle Robert Norse here, also known as Bathrobes Pierre, and that's the name of our show, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I got my broadsides in here, and I send them out at you, and you get a chance to send them back to me, or whatever you're thinking. 427-3772 is a phone number to call. And hey, phone lines are open. Give me a call. Let me know what you're thinking. We heard just now from Jane Kaiser about an upcoming rally noon on Saturday at the town clock, and that means I will be able to get there if I'm in town, hopefully. And I'll be trying to be a supporter of crazy people everywhere, except for those crazy city council members who need to take a rest, take a hike, and let the rest of us get a rest without getting arrested. It's the old story. Boy, I'm beginning to sound like a rap record. Wow. So, a lot of paper here in front of me to start running through. There was a city council meeting on Tuesday, and I only have part of it. I've ordered the tape from the city council. It sometimes is difficult for me to tape it, and the tape quality isn't. A 7 o'clock session of the July 10th City Council meeting. That's the one time when, for 30 minutes, the council sort of sits back, stares blankly at you, and lets you speak for each person for 3 minutes. Earlier in the day, when they actually pass substantive issues and matters and appropriations and things of that sort, they take a somewhat different stance. So when I pulled 8 different items off the consent agenda, which they otherwise would have just passed with one voice vote and that without any discussion or even individual specification of what those items were, Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, or Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, as I've taken to calling him, or Emperor Tim, if you don't like the German reference, told me that I would have only 30 seconds to speak on each item. Normally a speaker gets 3 minutes. Sometimes it gets 2 minutes. Last time Fitzmaurice gave me 1 minute. This time he decided he only wanted to hear me for 30 seconds, although other people who spoke on items were allowed essentially as much time as they needed. Their clock wasn't running, so it was what we call differential treatment, selective treatment, and in fact a violation of the Public Open Meetings Act, also known as the Brown Act. And had I the time to file all the complaints, there would be another complaint for that one, and perhaps there will be. But it was interesting. Throughout the afternoon, and the afternoon session of the City Council usually starts at 3 every second Tuesday, and they happen to have more meetings, but the regular meetings are second and fourth Tuesdays at City Hall down at 809 Center Street, for those of you who have a stomach for it. The afternoon session usually has substantive, all the appropriations that are coming down, and it's worth considering, and that's why I pulled the items off, not just to stand in front of the television cameras for 30 seconds. You do get to speak on camera because this goes out over cable TV. But because I felt it was important to challenge the city council members who otherwise would not get any criticism in the Sentinel, they wouldn't hear any criticism from their SCAN supporters or their Green Party admirers, or even some of the critics that they don't let into their meetings. So I thought, and it was important for, I think, the community to hear that too, that it's okay to stand up and say that the city council is naked as a jaybird and frolicking around while it's arresting other people for sleeping at night. That's in fact what the city council does, that is to say, it gives away huge amounts of money to favored groups such as the Mercy Charities Housing Corporation for so-called affordable housing project, the Dolphin Lee Project, which actually destroys more housing than it creates and uses up anywhere from 5 to 17 years of affordable housing. I haven't been able to get the stats yet. I still couldn't get a clear, straight answer from Cecil Cirillo in terms of the budget. She's the head of the redevelopment agency, gets a six-figure salary, and like the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, like city attorney, John Barisone, she's one of these implacable, in-place fixtures that you just can't get rid of, and who run the city, even though we thought this was an elected system. You know, we always thought, well, money controls the elections, and that's a bummer. But no, even if you can get a couple of candidates in there, you know, as we did in 1998, we thought Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, who were opposing the giveaway to Charlie Canfield's Seaside Company, even once they're in there, unless they're willing to challenge the city manager, the city attorney, the head of the redevelopment agency, and the police chief, you're not going anywhere. And of course, they've been refusing to do that. Except they kind of mutter quietly among themselves, a couple of them occasionally. They have the 4 votes to fire these people, to change them, or to direct them to take different policies in a no-nonsense way. But the reason, for example, that Camp Paradise is feeling the heat, that's the clean and sober, neat and tidy campground right along the San Lorenzo River, under the Highway 1 bridge, up a bit from the bridge to go upriver. It's easy to find right off of Felker Street next to Denny's. Go on down there and check it out. The reason Camp Paradise is suffered harassment and all kinds of heavy stress over July 3rd, 4th, and 5th of July weekend was because City Manager for Life Dick Wilson apparently took it upon himself to direct the police department to continue the harassment of these clean and sober campers who have no legal place to go. They are part of the Santa Cruz houseless community of 1,000 to 2,000, that many of whom were born here, certainly most of whom have lived here for a significant period of time, and who are our people. I'm sorry, that's how it is. And even for those who are passing through, you're talking about human beings who have basic human needs at night, the need to shelter, the need to sleep. And actually, it's my understanding that a great majority of the people in Camp Paradise are working people. That's why they live close to the city. They rush off to work every day on their bikes. They make enough money to conceivably do some renting, but there's nothing to rent. The rentals are so high, the profiteering is so intense, the university's gobbling up of affordable housing is so massive, the city council's failure to put forward any kind of rent control is so blatant that they are in a position where they have to live illegally in Camp Paradise, and they create what they can, which is a clean and sober campground where they maintain a situation where there's safety for women and children, where there is group meals, where there is there are people there watching possessions, where there are pets are cared for and debris and litter taken care of, where the entire area, according to neighbors, has been cleaned up much more so than had previously been the case on that riverfront. And then, let's say, if you contrast it with across the river. And I'm going to play now some speeches from the oral communications period of last city council talking about Camp Paradise. And before I do, just sort of give you a brief update. Camp Paradise, though it was threatened with police harassment, though labor-ready workers did show up, they said later, to go south, not north. It was felt by members of Camp Paradise after talking to these people and the day before on the streets when they saw the chits that they came down with, the work orders, that this was really an operation against Camp Paradise, and particularly since they've been told by Officer Seeley, apparently, that they were going to be raided, ticketed on the 3rd and raided on the 4th. Then he said ticketed on the 5th and... ticketed on the 4th and raided on the 5th, and causing great pressure and great stress among a group of people, some of whom are former addicts, cleaning up their act, working on becoming, and in fact, for the moment, and hopefully will continue to be useful citizens in our society, insofar as, I'm not saying people even with drug habits that are active aren't useful, but people, you know, who are making a strong attempt to avoid drugs in order to be even more useful and more politically, not just politically acceptable, but except and legal in that sense, or even, I think, presumably, the established system wants to support that. They're spending tens of millions of dollars, supposedly, to create all these anti-drug programs and drug courts, and you have huge amounts of people in jail, low-level drug dealers and users, which apparently, you know, is a great shakes with the prison guards industry and the police, but of course does nothing to solve the problem. In any case, here are people who are working to solve the problem themselves. And we have the city manager directing police chief, or apparently perhaps Officer Eric Seeley on his own, moving out there to threaten these people with arrests and tickets and telling them, you're going to have to dismantle this and dismantle that and get ready to leave. And the campers said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to take a stand. And they called the activists, and in their conversations with their lawyer, volunteer attorney Paul Sanford, when he, in essence, they thought he was telling them that they couldn't resist this occupation, they should just take their tickets and shut up and not go to the media, they disagreed with that. They fired him, although I think he has since been rehired, that's the word. And they said, we're going to organize resistance. And we're not talking about armed resistance. We're talking about the resistance of a community that knows that what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And they did organize resistance. They got the media down there when the labor-ready people, whichever direction they were going in, showed up, and suddenly they all drove away very quickly as Channel 46 cameras rolled and the reporter for the Metro, Sarah Phelan, took notes. And indeed, there's a very good article. I'm sometimes critical of Sarah's articles. I like her a lot personally, and I'm really pleased that she's broaching subjects around police misconduct that a lot of folks aren't, but I've had some criticisms of her articles for not cutting deeply enough on rent control and so forth. But this article was great. On the second reading, it really, I think, covers a lot of ground, talks about the background and the way that the Mercury News, the Sentinel, and other mainstream media just completely ignore. Namely, the fact that there are so many homeless people in Santa Cruz, no shelter for 95% of them. Actually, the shelter sends people over to Camp Paradise. I talked to Karen Brock, excuse me, of the Homeless Services Center today, and she reported to me that they're going to be sending a team out to Camp Paradise on Monday to offer potential social services to people out there in the event that police arrive in the next few weeks. Not that they're expecting the police to arrive. They haven't gotten some advance tip that the cops are coming. That's not what's happening. But she confided to me that there is going to be some outreach to folks so that if there's, they have some options. It makes me a little nervous because often what's done when authorities move in to crush self-help efforts, as this is at Camp Paradise, they'll pull out their vouchers for two or three nights and say, see, we've got a shelter for you for two or three nights. Then you get to go be illegal, not in a safe campsite, but in some dirty, drug-ridden area where you can't get together because we have a law that we call the camping ban that will not allow you to form self-help groups, to sleep safely in groups in well-lighted areas, to use the police facilities as they should be used to protect the community rather than to threaten vulnerable members of the community just for being poor. And that's, of course, the situation that not just Camp Paradise, but that 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people throughout the city find themselves in every night. You know, if they can stay on the good side of Eric Seeley, all is well. That's our Homeless Services Center resource officer. If they can stay on the good side of the police, if they can, lick enough butt and bow low enough and stay out of sight enough and move quickly enough, and exchange enough of their dignity and still keep their shit together, then they can survive in this city and county. But I'll tell you, it doesn't sound good to me, and it doesn't sound like a decent human rights situation, and I never think it's been a decent human rights situation. I don't think people looking in think so either, and I don't think people who are out there think so either. They're just stuck with what they've got. Now, apropos of all this, I was actually down at the Homeless Services Center today, as you know, and I got a second interview with a man who's living in his vehicle. And he's going to try to find some way to get, he's a little naive, he hasn't been around for a while, he's going to try to get the city to legalize a vehicular camping area, or parking area. And you may remember that many of us tried to do this last year under the Sugar Council, Keith Sugar, when he was mayor. We had fasts, we had demonstrations, we had lobbying efforts in the city council offices, we had petitions and initiatives, and we actually got a first reading of the so-called safe zones, which were zones in the Harvey West Park along the streets and in the Mission Street Extension areas, which were defeated by a combination of police department propaganda, false information from council members like Mike Rotkin and Michael Hernandez, and Downtown Association, Business Association, Michael Vasquez, press releases that said, oh, the camping ban is being repealed. Everybody can come to Santa Cruz and sleep wherever they want, that sort of thing. It wasn't. It was a small section of the sleeping ordinance, and it hadn't been repealed. It was actually going through a reading and through process. They were setting up the zones, and they were doing so too damn slowly was the problem, without the dumpsters and porta-potties that they needed to do. Same kind of faintness that they're showing now, and which you'll hear later in this program, comes up in the Camp Paradise situation, where even when Camp Paradise tries to provide its own porta-potty, it gets apparently pressured from the city, or the porta-potty company does, Porty Potty Company does, and they don't get their a normal business relationship where they're being paid to provide a porta potty gets sabotaged by apparently some city officials. Now, there's some dispute about this, but in any case, what we have is a situation where the city is making it criminal to live for homeless people, and they're doing so to assist the police in what the police are describing as a police problem, which is illegal camping, and the city manager describes as a legal problem. But what it really is, of course, is a problem of unspoken class warfare against poor people. That's what we have here, and that's what we have to recognize. And you have to start realizing that it's time to start supporting the people who are under the gun. Somebody just called in. Try calling again. I'll keep an eye on the phone line and try to answer you in case I've been ignoring you. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and lines are open, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, at 96.3 FM. Now, here we go. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Bob here.
Hey, Bob.
On what basis, on what legal basis, would a group of individuals be allowed to place a porta potty on public property for their own use?
Well, of course, you know, what I would prefer is that the City Council follow its mandate of February 1999 and put porta-potties there for general public use, which they're supposed to be doing under the Crone Task Force on Bathrooms. But the answer to your question is, it seemed to me that it would probably have to be, well, of course, I would say that probably construction companies may do it, although you might say that may be on the private property. I don't have a clear answer to your question. I think
it's simple, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about public property, therefore it's going to require a public permit, right?
Unless there's a process by which you can do this anyway.
I couldn't just say, you know, hey, I want to go put a porta potty down on at the town clock, and if I don't get to do it, well, then the city's at fault because they won't let me put my porta potty at the town clock. You just can't do that kind of stuff and have.
Well, it depends.
Public property and have private property.
You know, it depends. I mean, it depends on whether their facility is being provided for the general public.
The hitch with Camp so-called Paradise is that it's public property.
Mm-hmm.
It's not private property.
No,
their squatter is on public property. They don't have a permit. They don't have a use permit.
Well, you don't need a use permit.
It's illegal. And it, what astounds me is why it was allowed to surface publicly.
Well, of course, the reason that the reality is there are so many people who have to sleep at night that there is no choice but to let things surface publicly. And the reason it surfaced publicly was because the mayor apparently got a report of some kind of dispute at Camp Paradise that was exaggerated by, or actually a false report from a couple that had been out there. He went out there and he didn't investigate that issue. He just apparently was struck with how well run the camp was. And he commended them all and just said, you know, get rid of the medical marijuana stuff, even though the medical marijuana plants were, you know, for a person who had a WHAM card and it was okay for him to grow or and have that possess that number of plants under 215. The next day, the police, in violation of what the mayor said, came in and tore them out, and they demanded the camp leave and gave these, you know, not citations, but warnings. And Camp Paradise had the choice of either uprooting itself and disappearing into the bushes or making a stand. And they've taken a stand, and they've been there
what
ever since.
What stand are they taking, Robert?
They're saying that if they are using public land in a fashion that is, in fact, supported by the surrounding community, they should have a right to do so.
Did they ask for access and permission to use?
I believe so.
Who would they ask?
I don't know. I mean, I know that they.
I cannot believe that they
I know they've offered
permission.
To go through different, whatever, there is no process.
After the fact.
Bob, there's no process for asking.
All right.
There's a law that criminalizes survival camping in Santa Cruz.
There is a process for asking. You get a permit.
No, there's no permit for doing it. If you look at the camping ordinance, there is no permit permitted.
Exactly. So then there are permits. You can get temporary permits.
No.
Temporary use permits for public property.
3 days a year. That's it. Under Parks and Rec, and that's not a Parks and Rec facility.
That's the way it is right now.
Sorry, I don't. But to say that. What's your point? You know?
The point is that you can't just have somebody. You can't have a squat on public property set a precedent like
Why not?
This, and then say, well, here we are, and aren't we clean? Now let's rewrite law.
Damn right, man.
It shows you the absurdity of the law. You cannot blame whoever said you can't set up a porta potty there because they were right.
I don't think so.
You can't just, because once you do that, you are de facto allowing them to set up a tolerable squat on public property. And then where do you draw
this
the line?
This is the kind
again?
Of legalistic argument that I heard
it's
Barry
not,
Goldwater arguing about against civil rights protesters in the early 60s.
It's not a legalistic argument.
It is.
It's a common sense argument.
No, the common
Robert.
Sense is people have to survive. And if you make it criminal for them to survive, then they have to become criminals, and the law has to be changed.
Well, then what you're saying then, therefore, is that Camp Paradise is civil disobedience. Are you saying that?
It is, yeah.
All right. Well, then they therefore, in the name of civil disobedience, are willing to be ticketed, and they're willing to be carried out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they've said.
All right. So then, therefore, then it's a political act.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they would prefer just to be able to
which
live.
Which is how I see it. I see it as civil disobedience, a political act. And therefore, they got to be willing to be ticketed, and they got to be willing to go as far as they want to go with it, being carried out.
Well, I don't know if we want to, you know, put strictures on how they should proceed and what they should do. I mean, it seems to me, as I said, that you cannot criminalize a whole class of people and then say, well, then if they don't want to be criminals, then that's civil disobedience. I mean, yeah, I mean, certainly that's one way of looking at it. But I think the reality is they aren't really interested in being civilly disobedient. They want to simply survive and live. And they're doing what other people are doing in secret all over the area. And the idea that somehow that you have to do it in secret in an unsafe way for it to be tolerated is preposterous. And I think actually you
What's
probably agree with me.
Preposterous is that saying that a squat on public property should be tolerated in the year 2001.
No, it's the sleeping
example,
and the camping ban, Bob, and you know that.
Let's take the example of all the open space that's on either side of the freeway on Highway 1, right, up to where the fences are. Let's say people decided they wanted to squat along those.
Let's say they did. Let's say they needed to. And let's say they did that tomorrow and they cleaned up the area and instead of it being an unsafe area where junkies are, say that all happened. And then you, Bob, would move in with your law book and say, this is a squat. It has to be removed.
Well,
is that what you do?
What I, Bob, would do would be I would look for other routes that would be legalized.
Well, we've been trying that for years.
But it hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't. And this is
at best, Robert, civil disobedience.
This is the most tangible together thing that's happened in the last 5 years in terms of organized resistance to the sleeping ban that has garnered the most public support that I've ever seen. I mean, that's my view on this, Bob. I understand
maybe,
your feeling.
Maybe the outcome will be a low cost, sanctioned.
Could be
campground, okay?
Possibly.
Because then you're taking a route where you're allowing the public bodies that are to engage in correct action.
Well, no one's stopping they could have done this years ago.
I think that they don't have a choice in the final analysis but to close Camp Paradise. I don't see where there's another route. I'm amazed that they allowed it to surface to where it became public. That it is.
I think...
Because what they're going to do is they're going to produce, when they go in and have to start ticketing, which is inevitable, it's just going to produce
hopefully
national headlines.
Yeah.
It's already been in the Chronicle, all right, Camp Paradise.
Right, which is the point.
It's already regional news. It's allowed to become national
news. Well, of course, the problem is that these people in the city council fancy themselves to be great humanitarians and progressives, and they also... You know, they have numerous constituencies that have told them that they want them to end the sleeping ban, which is a part of the camping ordinance, and they are refusing to even put the matter on the agenda and have essentially for 3 years, though for a period of time it was on the agenda before it died last year. But certainly since last summer, it's been a completely taboo topic. So the reason they've let it go on is because half their constituencies, in fact perhaps more than half, support the kinds of initiatives that you drafted 3 years ago, along with other people in the committee to end the sleeping ban.
Yeah, those were legal routes to petition the government for a redress of grievances,
right.
Robert.
The point is the substance of the issue, whether it's done legally, whether it's done through protest.
Well,
the reality
is
people have to live.
The reality is
people have to live, Bob. You know that.
Is civil disobedience.
Whatever you want to call it, people have to live.
It's like... It can be compared to black people sitting at lunch counters and being hosed out.
I think it'll leave a mark.
It'll leave a mark, and maybe it'll progress towards a sanctioned low-income campground.
Right.
And
well,
it can be an accomplishment of a positive nature.
I'd like to see a bunch of people throughout the county, throughout the city, setting up similar campgrounds.
I think what Templeton should do, personally,
right.
in my opinion,
uh-huh.
is announce that this is an act of political civil disobedience. We are trying to elevate an issue to where people can understand that not only can this be accomplished, a low-income campground, but that it's necessary in our time.
I think he said that already, Bob. I mean,
That's not what I've heard. What I've heard is that we want to have a porta-potty at Camp Paradise.
Right.
We want to be sanctioned post-fact. That's what I've heard.
Well, that's true, too.
And that cannot be, Robert.
Oh, I don't know. I think it could be through a change in the law very quickly. Could be done as an emergency measure in one council session.
You know who hasn't spoken on this yet is the Santa Cruz Memorial Park people, who are the backdoor neighbors to Camp Paradise.
Right.
where Camp Paradise gets their fresh water from.
No, they don't get it there anymore. They've been cut off under pressure from the city, is what the Odd Fellows Cemetery has said.
So this is not so cut and dry where it's a nasty thing that the city won't allow them to have a porta potty there, which is what you're kind of trying to say. They can't.
No, they haven't said
that. They cannot.
I don't agree with you, Bob. If that were the case, they would make that statement publicly, but they are not doing that. They are not saying we do not have the ability to do this because we cannot allow a private individual to have a porta potty. They aren't saying that, and believe me, if they agreed with you, they would say it immediately because it would be something that would be easy for them to say and it would resolve the issue.
They haven't said that. In fact, there's going to be on Charlie Phillips' show in about 20 minutes, there's going to be some people on about Camp Paradise.
I appreciate you bringing that up.
Maybe the vice mayor, soon to be mayor, will make some public comment.
Why don't you call in and ask
about what the reality is.
Right.
Rather than the endless duck and cover routines that we've all become very familiar with.
We can hold our breath and hope. Let me point that out, that on Channel 27, Voices from the Village, I guess it starts at 7:30? Is that right, or is it 7?
I would like to commend the Santa Cruz City Council.
Hang on a second, Bob.
Yeah.
It starts at 7:30 or at 7?
Yeah, 7:30.
And that's Voices from the Village talking about Camp Paradise on Cable 27. So encourage people, if you want, check that out. Go ahead, Bob.
What I was going to say was that there's some controversies lately about rent control, mobile home rent control in Capitola, which boiled down to the fact that the property owner is restricted in how much they can raise rents on the spaces, whereas the tenant... holders can charge what the market will bear when they sell their mobile homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Santa Cruz did for its mobile home rent control in 1992 is says that, look, it's got to cut both ways. You're restricted for what you can sell your unit for. It's the correct way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's true across the board. I want to commend the members of the City Council in 92 for doing mobile home rent control the correct way. If you're going to restrict the property owner, you've got to restrict the mobile home owner also.
Uh-huh. Well, that's nice, and I hear you there.
Get that point in there.
Right. Well,
I think that there are ways to
now
bring
get them to do some rent control
board.
For the rest of us.
Yeah, there are ways to bring issues above board that hopefully become rational, and I would advocate for that. Robert, thank you for letting me get on the air.
Sure. Anything new on rent control in San Jose before you're on the phone, Bob?
I get emails. As I have said in the past, whatever people do along this line, it's a very noble effort because we're in a time now that these issues, which are dealing with rights of non-vested people, are being incredibly suppressed. So whatever happens over the hill, whatever happens this side of the hill, in regards to those that don't have vested interests, is commendable and is very noble, and I wish them the best. I don't have my finger on the pulse of what they're doing over the hill. They've met with the mayor about Just Cause Ordinance over the hill. And we'll see where it goes. Maybe they're the spark that'll produce change.
Which is more than we can say over here. The mayor doesn't want to even talk about the issue at all, as far as I can see.
Robert, I'll listen to you, and thank you for letting me get on the air.
Sure, thank you.
All right, you bet. Take care.
And that's the ever-controversial Bob LaMonica, who has been spearheading rent control and other causes such as legally ending the sleeping ban in certain zones in the city by initiative. That was certainly one of his projects, one of my projects too. A number of us worked on that in 1997, 98, and again 99, 2000. Hard-working guy. As you can see, I have my differences with him on some issues, but hey, just he's wrong, I'm right. Really simple. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and come on in and tell me what you think, and we'll see if you're wrong and I'm right again, or I will show you how I'm right, because clearly I'm always right. Let's hear now, let's see, we got about 45 minutes left. Before we hear a kind of a recapitulation of oral communications at the City Council, and by the way, I invite people from Camp Paradise who are out there, if you're listening to the show and you want to call in, if you have any access to a cellular phone or want to get up to Denny's, maybe take a dump at the same time and give a phone call in. Hey, love to hear what's going on out there. It's been pretty quiet, as I understand. For most folks listening, the city has taken a low profile after taking a beating over the 4th of July weekend for all the turmoil that was created by the false warnings of Officer Seeley and the public statements of City Manager Dick Wilson. I happen to feel that if the city doesn't have an alternative, it should keep its mouth shut, even when these things come high profile. Some private individuals want to sue the city and force them to go after homeless people, then let's deal with that. But in the, but I, to me, mind raising legalisms about this issue, well, different people have different views. Let's put it that way. Let's hear the view of a person out at the Homeless Services Center who's talking about life in his vehicle and his thoughts on what's been happening to him and people in vehicles. It's around noon. We're talking to
David Walker.
David, we're talking to you here at the Homeless Services Center. You're on the computer in the one of these new bays right outside Karen Brock's office. And you were talking earlier about people living in... You live in your vehicle?
Yes, I do. I live in a trailer.
How long have you been?
I've been in the state of California for approximately a month now.
How about in Santa Cruz?
Or Santa Cruz area for a month and a half.
Any trouble with the police?
No. Minor ones. Just the sleeping on the street stuff.
And what kind of, what does that amount to?
Well, the main thing that happens is the cars that are parked in the same area for long periods of time end up getting tagged because the police don't want them on the streets due to the complaints of the business owners around the place.
And have you yourself gotten a tag or a ticket?
Not yet, because I've been smart enough to move my stuff and prepare myself for such things, but a lot of people around me have.
Now, I talked to Karen Brock, and she says that there's some kind of movement to go to city council with some of these issues and try to get some changes. Are you interested in that?
Yeah, the thing that concerns me is I would like to see a place that the city can provide a place for people to go that own a vehicle or a motorhome or whatever of such sort, and have a place to be able to park it for a certain amount of time and create a job setting for them so they can move out of their situation. A lot of these homeless people in the city now have no options, nowhere to turn, and they're forced to sleep behind places that aren't exactly legal or as far as the state goes.
Now, in the past, sometimes vehicular residents have tried to set up organizations of other vehicular residents, like in San Francisco, they have a vehicularly housed community. In Santa Barbara, there's a thing called How Homeless on Wheels. Are you interested in setting up a similar kind of organization here in Santa Cruz?
Are these organizations set up for people with cars and whatnot for giving them a place to temporarily park their car for a certain amount of time?
I think there are organizations that want to see that happen and also want to see people who live in vehicles be respected and protected and kind of get together for mutual aid.
Mutual aid, yeah. That's what I'm looking for, is to find some sort of alternative to telling people, well, you're illegally here and, you know, you can't help being homeless, and people who are homeless can't help being in their situation. It just falls upon them just like everybody else who ends up homeless. People need some sort of alternative or a place to go that the state or the county can go ahead and say, this is a good place for you to park or go, and it's all justified for a certain amount of time. And maybe even apply some rules behind the city council and the city itself, like maybe with the trash and urinating and the feces and all that.
Have you heard of other people getting many tickets for sleeping outside or sleeping in a vehicle?
Oh, yes, many. Many have been getting tickets out here, especially around here in the shelter. And a lot of these people have no other option, no place to go, so they don't even really flash on the tickets. They just get them.
How many tickets do you know personally that people have gotten?
Well, personally, I know two people who got their car towed this morning, today, and I've had other friends, probably about a total of 8 or 9 people.
In what period of time?
The last month I've been here, month and a half maybe.
Now, are these tickets for people who, simply for sleeping, or are these for not, like, leaving a big mess or dumping by the vehicle?
Most of the people, it's just for the sleeping. There are a lot of people are very responsible about the trash and whatnot, because they know that it creates, it draws attention to them to leave any trash around on the streets. Most cases, it's usually for people just sleeping in their cars.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a number that you would like people who are listening to this show to call you at if they are living in vehicles and they want to be a part of an effort to organize so that, you know, people can present their concerns to city council or to the community? I don't think city council is going to listen to you, frankly, but the community might. And
yeah,
if you know, that I think is a good idea. Do you have a number you can be reached at?
The only place you could find me at is right here at the shelter right now. basically, I have no mailing address here, so if anybody needs to find me, they would have to come here.
115 Coral Street is a mailing address here.
Yeah.
Your name again is?
David Thomas Walker.
And what do you go by?
David.
David, I work for a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is sort of a loosely knit bunch of advocates, very loosely knit. Some say we're several sandwiches short of a picnic basket, but that's another story. We have a number, 423-HUF, and if you want, we can put that out for you to leave, for people to leave messages for you about, you know, vehicular civil rights problems.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, a good way to spread the word, and for other people who feel like they have no options can turn, so everybody can unite for one purpose. Yeah, makes good sense to me.
So if you want to, if you have a vehicle or you're concerned about supporting people in vehicles who are being hassled for sleeping, give a call to 423-HUF, 423-4833, and David, you give a call to that number too and leave a message, and we'll try to get the information to you as to what's going on. Okay. So there you have it. Thank you very much.
And there you have it. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM is what you're tuned to, and 427-3772 is the call-in number. If any of this strikes your interest, you want to respond to any of it, and as the caller said who called in a few minutes ago, in about 7 minutes on Channel 27, we're going to have Voices from the Village, a community television show interviewing various public officials and Camp Paradise folks. That's under the host, Charlie Phillips. Still trying to get Charlie to stand up to these public officials and deal with them in a forthright manner that actually stops trying to woo them and starts trying to question them in a meaningful public way so that the real information gets out. I hope that happens tonight. I'd be curious to hear if it does. I don't have cable TV, so I can't tell. But I encourage folks who do to call into the show or call into the HUF line at 423-HUF and let me know how the show went. Still annoyed with Charlie for sitting on a tape that he's had for 6 years, which showed the responsibility of Kennedy and Rotkin for destroying the previous tent city, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, the Back 40, in December of 1995, which ultimately caused the death of a number of homeless people. And we've talked about that on the air. Charlie apparently doesn't want to offend the city council members by putting that information out, but I think it's information the community needs. It's particularly important in this current crisis to see the kinds of tricks that they used before, the kinds of smear jobs, the separating of camp residents from activists, the use of phony pretexts like, oh, they've got no porta potties, oh, it's too rainy, it's too floody, oh, there are drugs there. These are the kinds of pretexts that were used to destroy the only legal campground. And it was a legal campground, for example, apropos of the remarks of the last caller. It had a permit. It was on city property. There was a porta potty on the city property, several of them, although they weren't emptied enough, and they were underfunded by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and the people were not allowed to use the restrooms of the Homeless Services Center next door, even though employees slept in the bays at night and got privileges that the several hundred people who slept outside didn't get, the right to use a restroom, and that the Camp Paradise people don't get, and the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people who sleep out in the Poganip and the industrial zones have no access to either. And should have, not just for their benefit, but for the health and safety of our community, and because of common sense reasons that I think don't really need a lot of explanation. What do you think? Should all these folks sort of go away until they get a legal permit, or should they announce that they are simply a protest encampment? Both these things don't seem to me to be a particularly good idea. They're just trying to live. I think that's really the best appeal to the community is for them to say, look, you know, we're trying to live here. If you want to, we're also willing to pay for the privilege of living somewhere else, but we have nowhere else to go. Let's deal with this issue now, and we're willing to, if necessary, go to jail on it, but we're not here to go to jail. We're here to try to find a solution. And that's what I think not just Camp Paradise folks are doing, but I'm hoping that this is something that will spread to other campgrounds, and that's what I'm urging folks who are living in other camping situations to consider doing what Camp Paradise is doing, to get together a coalition of campgrounds who to start doing the same kind of thing. I mean, obviously it's best to do it as a clean and sober campground because that removes a major criticism. I mean, it's okay to get drunk if you're in your house. It's okay to shoot up if you're in your house. That's always the interesting double standard that is applied to homeless people. But if you're homeless, you have to be above suspicion. You have to be a superhuman person. You have to be super clean and all that sort of thing. And it's a weird thing, but that apparently is the middle class sensibility on the issue of being homeless. So I would like to see camps banding together and from different parts of the city. They don't have to say where they are. They don't have to raise a flag that says, here we are, come and get us. But they have to say, we are trying to survive. We support the idea that we need to have legal places to be. We need to, there needs to be a permitting process for us. There needs to be a way that we can live. And not just us, but people who are more disabled than we are, who simply don't have, you know, the means to hide out deeply, to set up camouflage, to trek deep into the Poganip, that sort of thing. Anyway, I would encourage, that's what I'm looking to see, is to see folks from different camps stand up and say this. Because I don't think the Camp Paradise people can really do it alone. And I know that they're making a heroic effort to do it, and they're succeeding so far with community support, and perhaps they will. But the likelihood is that they will be offered a deal by the city and bought off somewhere, which isn't bad for them. I mean, I hope they find a piece of property. But that the rest of the community is going to continue. The rest of the homeless community will continue to have to hide, will have to deal with accidental death and troll beatings and police harassment and all the stuff that goes with second-class or third-class citizenship if you're in a homeless status. So I'd like to see this become the flashpoint for a real change in the law and the social service facilities here in Santa Cruz. And I think this could actually serve as a kind of a beacon to other communities in this country as well. What do you think? Give me a call, 427-3772, or if you're slow to think about this and you want to talk to me about it later, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, at Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we'll talk about it there. Steve Argue, Steadfast Steve, as I used to call him, he's an activist who ran for city council. He was jailed for 7 months on a bogus charge of assaulting an officer. He hit a police officer in the nose, Officer Lefebvre, when that officer essentially endangered a woman and her child in a brutal attack during a civil rights rally against the war in Yugoslavia in front of the McPherson Center on Front Street back in May of 99. And an independent investigation by the Citizens Police Review Board's $10,000 investigator hired from out of town resulted in the CPRB finding that excessive force was used in numerous cases throughout in this rally by Officer Lefebvre. And Officer Lefebvre, for whatever reason, has disappeared from the Santa Cruz Police Department and moved to another police department in some East Bay city unknown, where he gets to start again until he fucks up again. And hopefully he won't. But of course, that's the situation with police officers who get convicted of brutality by police review boards or even by courts. You know, they get to move on, and they move through sort of like a criminal underground, only it's a kind of a blue overground where police officers cover for each other and send them out of the community to another police department so they can do their good work somewhere else. Steve Argue called me today, and he's been doing some work against the sleeping ban. He also has a lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz when, in November of 1998, an officer Garner, I called him Grim Grip Garner because of what happened, he came up to Steve while he was standing in front of the New Leaf Market selling Street Spirit, the homeless monthly newspaper that you can sell if you want to get in touch with me at 423-HUFF. Free. It doesn't cost you anything for the first 10. It costs you a dime for each one thereafter, and you get to sell them for a buck. It's a good deal. Steve was selling them, and Garner demanded that to see his permit, and that he couldn't do it without a permit. And he said, "Don't be ridiculous. You don't need a permit to sell a street newspaper." That issue was decided several months ago by Chief Belcher in another case. Garner wouldn't accept this. Called over a community service officer, threw Steve to the ground, mashed his head in the cement, handcuffed him, dragged him off to jail, where he was held for 4 days. Again, assaulted in jail, and then released without charges. Although he couldn't get his police report for 8 months thereafter. And subsequent complaints sent to the Citizens Police Review Board on this issue, I was one of the complainers. the chief of police changed the reasons that Argue was arrested, claiming instead of being arrested for selling a street newspaper, which is legal, he was arrested for obstructing the sidewalk, which wasn't true, and doesn't appear on the arrest report. So the police chief, I then accused, of lying to the public, which I regard as an even worse offense than Garner's brutal attack on Steve Argue, because if the police chief is lying to cover up for officers, who knows what's going to be covered up in the course of his administration. And, of course, the Citizens Police Review Board ran like a bunch of frightened chickens. I asked them to establish a process by which the police chief could be investigated. They wouldn't do it. Instead, they sent it to his pal, city manager for life, Dick Wilson, who has been buddies with Belcher since time immemorial. And, of course, Wilson smiled and stamped, "Forget it," on the complaint, without much explanation, of course. And since that situation, however, Steve has been more successful. Since no charges were filed, he filed civilly against the city for violating his First Amendment rights, and also for, I guess it's for pain and suffering and false arrest and assault, and I'm not quite sure of exactly the charges, but that was, those were the incidents that happened around it. And he, the city tried to get the suit dismissed, and they failed. And now apparently there is settlement talks going on, where Steve was talking for, you know, looking for thousands of dollars as compensation for all this, and that's just very good news. It should also be said that the vendors of Street Spirit have not been harassed much since then, though people with signs have been apparently a particular focus of hostility for Sergeant Butchie Baker, who doesn't seem to understand the solicitation law. And we found that, you may remember, last show or the show before, we had Steve Elliott, who I call Rockman D, downtown. He has an upcoming court case. He actually went to the city attorney and requested assistance in dropping the case because Baker was charging him under a non-existent crime. Friends, your worst nightmares and your fondest dreams coming at you again on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's July 12th, 2001 show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, in its sixth year and still shouting. Stay with us.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, Marilyn Monroe, Rosenberg, Sage, Bomb, Sugar Ray, Panmunjom, Randall, the King and I, and the Catcher in the Rye, Eisenhower, Bat-
suffering.